Easterly Government Properties is a real estate investment trust, that is, a REIT, which owns and operates properties leased primarily by U.S. government agencies. So we're talking the FBI, DEA, and VA, and federal courthouses. Easterly has been seen as a defensive niche player because of its government-backed tenancy. But the question is that still the case? Easterly CEO Daryl Crate is here to join us. Daryl, welcome to the Property Play.
Dan, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you. Now, these are highly specialized buildings, right? They have long-term leases backed by the federal government, giving them this kind of unusually stable cash flow compared to, you know, some of the other players in the broader office sector who, you know, have been falling under some pressure recently. So, but I want to know how politics play into your sector.
Yeah, no, it's a really great question. And candidly, you know, there's this enormous misperception in this space because we've got two components going on in government today. One, there are buildings that the U.S. government owns, and they have let those buildings deteriorate materially. And then they have a leased portfolio where professional landlords like us are managing their buildings and their facilities are in excellent shape. And so what's happening in this transformation is that you look at the buildings that the U.S. government maintains, they have $85 billion of deferred maintenance that's piled up. Why is that? Let's imagine you're running the FDA. When your budget gets cut by Congress, what's the first thing that you're going to do?
Move people out.
Well,
fire them.
Well, no, you're actually not going to fix your roof. And you're not going to maintain your building, but you're going to try and keep your programming going as long as you possibly can. So what's ended up happening in many of these buildings across the country is they've got leaky roofs, the buildings are in horrible shape, because the U.S. government just isn't programmed to take care of those facilities. Today, you know, there are about 11 FDA labs across the country. Seven of them are in horrible condition. All of those are going to be rebuilt over these next 10 years, and all of them will be leased, you know, where there'll be a private landlord who's working with it so that building maintains in terrific shape for the first 10, 20, 30 years.
So when I think about, well, I mean, I know DOGE was seven, 8 months ago, but when we think about the cutbacks, whether it's, you know, in government funding for biotech and for healthcare and all the things that we've seen cuts, and there were obviously big DOGE cuts, and that means people moving out and talk about buildings being shut down or being, you know, I guess converted into other types of properties. That's not necessarily hitting your sector in any way?
No, it certainly does. In that, if you look at there's about 400 million square feet of space that the U.S. government occupies. The reality is that all of these challenges are generally happening in buildings that they maintain, mostly around Washington. You know, so if you look in this town, you know, where much of the bureaucracy exists, many of these buildings are empty. But if you go out into the field where the mission's occurring, you know, those buildings are full and being utilized.
So your buildings aren't all in D.C.?
No, we actually own no federal buildings in the district. All of our buildings are around the country, generally in the smile of the country where population is growing.
And the smile would have
the smile up. Being from San Francisco down through Texas, up through Florida,
then
into North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah. And
the
those
Sun
areas,
Belt, as we've been calling it.
Because, you know, the FBI, you know, grows, all of this grows with population. When you look in real estate, you can think about it as absorption and in each of the areas. But look at the demographics that are driving the real estate and driving the need. As we have population, sadly, we haven't figured out, some percent of the population will be criminals and we need the FBI. Some percent of those babies born will ultimately be addicts and we need the DEA. The Veterans Administration, many of the folks who are serving are quite young and they have 40, 50, 60 years to live when they come back from service, and the VA needs to take care of them. So that as those populations grow, the facilities need to be there in order for the government to succeed its mission. And that rides above every sort of political debate.
So
these are areas that America believes that this is what the government should be doing.
So how do they change administration to administration in your sector?
Yeah, no. It's and this is why
or
we
do
look,
they not?
Well, we look at mission-critical facilities because they really aren't vulnerable, you know, to these changes. You know, in my life, I spent time in banking, financial services. I was in an asset management business for a little while. And then ultimately, I worked with Mitt Romney for about 10 years. And in that, I had an opportunity, as he was governor of a state and then ultimately ran two presidential campaigns, to get to see each of these agencies and how they work as he was thinking and preparing, you know, what he was going to do if he were elected. And you could see in some of these agencies, there was clarity. clarity of mission. There was no confusion. And then there were other agencies that really were susceptible to the political winds. And those are the agencies where we don't rent a facility.
So it informed you in actual real estate
investment. Absolutely.
And so, tell me exactly how.
Yeah. So if you look, when the FBI would show up at a meeting and you'd learn about what that agency is doing, their mission is very clear on what they need to be doing. And what becomes clear with the mission is the specific facilities they need to be able to move things forward. And so seeing those types of buildings were the buildings that we wanted to own. Because when you think about what we're doing, we're buying the real estate and basically selling the credit. You know, the U.S. government is a AA-plus, you know, borrower. That's the money that goes in the top of the REIT. And then what gets paid out in a dividend to shareholders at a rate of that's close to 8% is this full faith and credit U.S. government money that ultimately is just moving through the real estate. And that real estate is in buildings that last 10, 20, 30, 40 years. The average, we buy very young buildings. The average age of our whole portfolio is about 16 years. A government building, when you squint at it, you see a building today from the 1970s and it looks a little old. Buildings from the 80s, still kind of relevant. Buildings from the 90s, they meet your expectation. And so you can see the age of a building being 30, 40 years old is really what folks expect from those government facilities. So when we have a building that's 16 years old, it's going to have a lease renewal at year 20. It will have another lease renewal for 10 years and 10 years after that.
So it'll soon be the older building out there.
And this is a long set of years of full faith and credit U.S. government money that's coming in. And so when we look at value of the portfolio, it's very exciting for investors because relative to a treasury bond, you know, we have a considerable premium today.
Yeah, it sounds almost like a Fannie Freddie backed mortgage. That's it. Backed by the government. So does this give you any thoughts of opportunity when you look? You said you're not in D.C. proper,
yeah.
But there's a lot of distress in D.C. government office buildings and buildings they own. Do you see an opportunity there to either buy them and knock them down and rebuild?
There is an enormous opportunity, not necessarily for us, but for value-added developers. Those are the folks who need to be redeveloping Washington, D.C.
But you don't want to buy them as government buildings in your portfolio.
No, because for us, we're really just about that stability. We start with the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. We're looking for buildings with very long lives. Our occupancy is near 100%. It's 97, 90.
Even with government layoffs.
Yeah. When you bring up DOGE, none of our leases were canceled because DOGE wasn't about getting rid of the FBI and these other mission-critical departments that are out there.
But still, people heard layoffs, and that hit your stock.
Yeah. I mean, with DOGE, the immediate reaction was that all of these leases were going to get canceled. That wasn't the case. But that's where folks went, and that headline is what hit the stock. But the reality was, for us, you know, DOGE is really a tailwind over time. Because
how?
I'll tell you. Because with DOGE, it really was about bringing efficiency to government. And let's go back to the time of Ronald Reagan, right? We think of him as the president who cut the budget the most and smaller government moving things forward. Government did not shrink under Ronald Reagan. Did not shrink. Why? Because the population didn't shrink. Things get right-sized. And DOGE, for all the calamity and confusion that was around it, it really did infuse and leave a sense that efficiency is a good in government. The reality is, though, government needs to move slowly. Why? Because we do need to have a balance of ideas in creating policy, and government can't make mistakes. So, when you look at, example, the FAA putting in a new air traffic control system, they can't just go buy one, put it up in a year, and see what happens. They had to go through a 10-year process in order to design that system, test that system, make sure that it was satisfying the constituents. So because it takes a long time, it avoids big errors, because those big errors are very costly to the American people.
Okay, so, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way whatsoever, yeah. You have this very stable set of properties. You have this very stable, cash flow coming in from the government. You have this, as you said, slow-moving decision-making government behind you.
Yes.
Sounds a little boring from the perspective of how does a CEO get creative and interesting?
Right.
How does Daryl Crate innovate in this sector?
Great idea. Because, what I'll tell you is we try to be real estate without the drama. because that's good for people, that's good for the dividends, that's good for what we're creating. But what we are doing is filling the gaps in the capital system around these projects. So example, when the government, we're building two courthouses now for the U.S. government, when they identify a project, when the funds get allocated, you know, by Congress, then they go out and bid the project to developers. On some of those projects, we bid directly, places where we either have an insight into the area, or it's a project where there are very few developers and the government's come to us and said, we really need this project to move forward. In other projects, there are many, many folks, you know, who are bidding. Sometimes they bid very aggressively. In doing so, they need to go and develop these buildings. Because of the strength of our leases, these developers could borrow almost 90 cents on the dollar when they were building a building. And why is that true? Because they were developing a building that was then going into a stabilized lease with the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Now, what's happened to banks during this time where interest rates have popped up, capital's become more scarce, developers now, instead of being able to finance 90 cents on the dollar, can only finance 70 cents on the dollar. So that leaves this 20-cent gap. What's going to happen? Because a developer has their development machine, and you've got to feed the beast. So what's happening when the banks pull back is that beast needs to shrink a little bit, but then they need somebody to step in between the equity that they're used to putting up and the bank financing. And that's where we can step in. Easterly's going to step in and be able to finish the project. We're not going to have to go.
So again, it's super safe.
Yeah. And so it's all those belts and suspenders. But the creativity, you know, for us is, our portfolio is, you know, the danger in the portfolio is getting run over by a glacier. It's all slow moving. But translating the cash flows from our portfolio into cash flows that investors want is really the key.
That's what I want to get at, is what are the returns? I mean, again, it sounds like a very stable, very steady, very kind of boring market. I'm sorry, I said it twice.
Yeah.
But I just, like, for investors looking at this sector, what is enticing other than the stability?
Well, what is exciting is, one, when we talk about DOGE and government efficiency, the government also understands that leasing buildings rather than owning is the way to go. Today, one-third of the U.S. government's portfolio is leased.
Compare
two-thirds
that
is
to
owned.
30 years ago?
Yeah, 30 years ago, maybe 15-20%. Okay. But it's been slow growth. But I imagine, you know, that in these next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see two-thirds of that portfolio is going to be leased. So there's an enormous, you know, total addressable market. And that because those buildings are just better and serve the American people better, it's a lot easier for the government to call up a landlord and complain about the light bulb than find somebody in government who's going to come and replace it. And so
what happens to these behemoth buildings sitting here in D.C. take up six blocks?
I think many are a pile of rocks. They're not really so great with the wireless, and those are going to have to be redeveloped by some value-added developers.
Probably into multifamily.
And they're going to have to be very creative about where those go, and hopefully they use, you know, some of the nostalgia of the building in order to translate it into something that's a very exciting piece of real estate.
But does that, coming out of the government portfolio, feed into demand for your property?
It certainly does, because those folks do need to be relocated somewhere. But for us, we don't look to have plain office. You know, so again, we won't be looking to come into D.C. What we will be looking to do is replace, you know, the 7 FDA labs that need to get built. There are many courthouses in the country that need to be established. There are almost 24 VA facilities, you know, outpatient facilities that need to be built. So we have several $1 billion of projects that are ahead, and we'll be excited to bid on, complete, or finance them. And so as we look forward and what we need to do, our company is not terribly large. We have about $3 billion in assets. So doubling and then doubling that again is certainly possible with this total addressable market, all with the real estate without the drama, you know, full faith and credit
of the
U.S.
government.
Time.
No drama.
I can just tell you. Yeah. So every time you say boring, I smile because
you love it.
It's terrific. And it's really what we're bringing forward.
And I'm curious, though, you know, when you talk to some other folks in the office sector and they need to get workers back to the office, and they need to entice them back. I did a podcast with the CEO of BXP, and he was all, you know, Boston Properties, he was talking about how you have to add the amenities and you have to add the bells and whistles, and you look at, you know, Amazon's HQ2 and the dog parks and the vegetable gardens on the roof. Do you need to do any of that?
We do not need someone to play the piano in the lobby. We do not need bagels once a month from the landlord.
Because your workers don't need to be enticed, they're forced.
No, they don't, because they are. The Use It Act demands that people be back in the office. If you're getting a government paycheck, you have to show up at the office. That's how it works.
So it costs you less in development, I imagine.
I mean, well, as we think about it, yes. You know, for maintaining, you know, for capital expenditures, we need to take care of the building, paint and carpet. Nothing fancy.
Nothing dramatic, nothing fancy.
That's it.
So what's the trajectory of this sector? Are you the only ones in it, or is there a competition?
There are others.
We are the largest.
Yes. We are the largest. And
that's why we're talking to you.
Okay, well, there you go. But at the end of the day, there's people who come in and out of the sector, but it really is developing that deep knowledge around what our tenant needs. That makes things work.
Well, so you talk about efficiency, and of course, since we talk about it in every single interview I do, there is AI, which is all about the efficiency and making everything more efficient. I'm curious what you think AI, what the impact is going to be on both government, the government workforce and the size of the government workforce, and also on your workforce.
Right. Well, you don't have to take my word for it. If you look at some of the analyst community and others, they call us the AI immune REIT, because AI is not going to catch criminals. There's going to do many, 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 many other things before it does that. You know, ours is a on-the-ground kind of agency. So when you look at the FBI, when you look at the DEA, they do have to be out in the field. They do have to seize the drugs. They do have to put them, you know, into safes.
And the courts have to try
and the
criminals.
Courts, yeah, and that's not going to happen over
AI.
There's
bureaucracies that are going to be made more efficient.
There absolutely are.
Department of Labor or something.
You could not be more correct, but that's exactly why we don't have any buildings in Washington, because right now the office sector is under enormous pressure for AI, for remote work. Folks really don't know the number of square feet they need. They don't know what that office environment is. You know, and you talk about the amenities that need to be delivered. Those amenities will be very different 5 and 10 years from now, and that's expensive. And what's happened in the real estate sector around office generally is that every tenant, be it in real estate, be them in fashion, be them in beauty, whatever they're doing, when the landlord comes and says, let's renew the lease, they say no. They just say no, because they know they have the power. They know the office sector is back on its heels. And accordingly, prices continue to have a tremendous amount of pressure.
But even in the FDA, say, you don't think that labs are going to be robotic and that there's going to be AI is going to do all the lab work for them? Because we've done stories about how, you know, lab demand is going to shrink because you're going to have not just AI, but robotics. And it's also going to have to change the actual footprint of the offices, because you're going to have to incorporate sort of mini AI data centers within these laboratories, as well as large-scale robots.
Maybe so, but what's terrific is I'd love to take you a building in Charleston, South Carolina that we have, which is the most innovative prescription fulfillment center for the Veterans Administration. They have 9 of these across the country. The one that we have is all robotics. It's like Wonka Chocolate Factory with opioids and everything that you've ever imagined. And they fill 110,000 prescriptions a day. 110,000 prescriptions are filled and sent out by FedEx, you know, right in the back of that building. And that is robotics, and you've got a happy workforce, and it's getting done each and every day. And so we consider that to be a mission-critical facility, and we love people, but we're also going to love robots.
We're going to love robots. Yeah, but what about your particular workforce? Are you, as a, you know, real estate company, becoming more efficient because AI is doing the work?
Yeah, without a doubt. We do love AI. We teach people to work on that, but in every part of our business, we're finding efficiency.
Does that mean fewer employees? Because a lot of CEOs I've talked to say, well, we might not be laying people off, but we are not hiring.
I think that's absolutely true. And folks need to become more expert, you know, in what they do. It's our job as a company to take folks and turn them into, you know, resident experts in knowledge.
So just finally, your father was a Navy captain. You went into first finance, then you went into politics with Mitt Romney. Yeah. As a CEO of a very undramatic company, how is your leadership style and your learning from your very kind of differentiated past inform how you lead your company?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's really about transparency. And one of the things that's been very exciting as I stepped into this role a couple of years ago is that we do have all these experts. And what can happen, one of the things my dad, you know, always taught me is you just can't let people be siloed, and you have to let people see and learn. And so what we've done in our company is we have a leadership team that represents each of these different disciplines that we need to do very well. But we're very open about people's performance, what they're doing, what they need to learn, how they can be better. In essence, I'm grooming everybody to be able to run the company, and they're doing a great job.
The undramatic Daryl Crate, CEO of Easterly Government Properties. Thank you so much.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for the time.